spiritual life and how to do meditation practice. So let go of the past, yeah, because it's already gone. You don't worry about the future because the future hasn't yet arrived. And based on that, you're able to see clearly in the present moment. It's a very nice little idea about what meditation is about. But exactly how do we do this? It is easy to say, give up the past, yeah? It's easy to say, give up the future, but when you sit down on the backside, what comes to you? Past and the future, yeah? Did anyone think about the past and the future when you half an hour meditation? Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, just a little bit, glimpses coming into your mind, yeah? It's very hard to sit for a full half an hour, especially at the beginning, very hard for not some thoughts to come in because of the habit patterns are so strong, yeah? So how can we deal with that? And the easiest thing to deal with, perhaps, depending on your proclivities and your kind of your mind state, is perhaps the past. The way to deal with the past, yeah, to let go of the past, is to forgive, essentially. So much of the problems that we have with the past has to do with people and unfinished business, things that we are not really have been able to get over. So forgiveness, letting go, is really such an important part of the practice and the ability to move beyond this. And you can see that a thing like forgiveness, yeah, is actually something that is not necessarily very easy to do either. So it's something that you have to do in your you have to do it outside of your meditation. You have to do it also within your meditation, and it's something that grows over time, that you have to do again and again and again. And as you grow over time, then it actually starts to work and it starts to function. Then it kind of becomes part of your practice. So many of these things, of these techniques that we use in meditation practice, you can't just use it in meditation and that's it. You have to use it throughout your daily life, throughout your living. And as you think about these things continuously, not continuously, but regularly, I should say, otherwise we don't do anything else, but regularly, yeah, they start to have an effect on your mind. And then when you come to your meditation, it actually starts to work in your meditation practice. This is the idea of just forgiving and letting go of the past. More interesting, perhaps, more important, perhaps, is the future. How to deal with the future. And this is because I think a lot of what we think about, what we conceptualize in meditation practice, is about what we're going to do next. Yeah, about family things, work things, and all of this kind of stuff. So how can we deal with the future in a way that kind of neutralizes those kind of thoughts? And there's a number of things that you can do. One of the most powerful ways of dealing with any kind of thinking in your meditation, whether it's the future or past, is to prioritize the meditation practice, prioritize the spiritual life. Yeah, making this what really matters. Remember that, remembering that even all the things that you do in your ordinary life, outside of coming here to meditate and listen to Dhamma talks or whatever, all the things that we do in our life, the things we might call the worldly aspect of our life, all of those get meaning, they get importance and purpose because of the spiritual qualities we put into them. Yeah, take your family life, for example. What is it that makes family life worthwhile? It's not just having a family. Just having a family is kind of neutral. It doesn't mean anything at all. It is the kindness, the compassion, the understanding, the love, all of those things, the care. When we put those things into the family life, then it becomes worthwhile. The wisdom we put into it, yeah? So it is the spiritual qualities that actually make the worldly things, the things that we kind of occupy us on a daily basis, make them worthwhile and make them meaningful. And I would say it's exactly the same thing with the work life as well. If you go to work, it's not really enough just to work for a living or to have to work for advancement or whatever it is. It is the spiritual qualities that you put into that work life, whether you deal with your customers or your colleagues, yeah, in a way which are kind and compassionate and caring. That is what gives real quality even to work life. Otherwise, it becomes very shallow and very meaningless. And when you start to look at life like that, you start to see that actually it is spiritual qualities that make everything really worthwhile, gives everything meaning here. Without those spiritual qualities, everything becomes kind of dry and pointless and meaningless. It's all about accumulation and cold money, yeah, and that kind of stuff. It hasn't got any heart qualities to it. And of course, this is even more obvious when you get to the end of your life. When you get to the end of your life, everything has to go. All the things that you have accumulated in this life, the friendships, the people, the status, even your physical body, everything has to go. And all that you carry with you into the future. This is the Buddhist kind of view, yeah? All you take with you into the future are your spiritual qualities. So in this life, the spiritual qualities are what give life meaning. As you die, come to the end of your life, this is what gives life meaning. This is it. This is really what life is all about. So once you get that, you change your priorities. Too often, I don't know how many of you here are like that, whether you come here, you think, yeah, I'm going to do some meditation practice and then that will enhance my ability in my career. Is that why you're here? To improve your career because of meditation practice? Or, you know, if I meditate, then I will become a kind of a cooler person and I have more friends because people who have a lot of metta, they have more friends, yeah? You come here to get more friends. Yeah, maybe not a bad place to come to have friends, actually, you know, because all these good Buddhist people coming here. But actually, it's the wrong way of thinking about it. If you come here to meditate, or you go anywhere to meditate, to enhance the qualities of your ordinary life, it means you have your priorities wrong. It means you prioritize your ordinary life, and your spiritual life is subsidiary to that. That is there to boost your ordinary life. And guess what happens? When you sit down in meditation practice, because your ordinary life is more important than your spiritual life, you're going to think about it. Yeah, why? Because it matters more to you. If you are here to make you a better money manager, you can make more money, yeah, then you're going to think about, very likely, you will get sidetracked and think about that money, because that is what your priorities are. But remember, anything that makes anything meaningful in this world really has to do with spiritual qualities. Prioritize the spiritual life, put that on top. And remember that when you come here to meditate, all of the things that you have been doing in your daily life, your family life, your work life, anything else that you do is there to support your ability to meditate when you come here. Because you do everything with spiritual input. You do everything as part of a spiritual path. And that helps you, feeds into your meditation practice. Of course, there is a great benefit of that. Because if your meditation is going well, then when you do go back to your family, you do go back to work, you do actually do better. Yeah, it actually is better. It actually does improve. But don't make that the goal. Just make that an outcome that happens naturally. And then when you get things right, you don't think about your worldly life in your meditation anymore. Why? Because it's subsidiary. Yeah, now you have come to what is the pinnacle of what life is about. Why am I going to think about all those other things that are just here to support what I'm doing now? Giving things the right priorities actually enables, is a way of thinking about the world that enables you to become more peaceful in your meditation. The future doesn't really matter so much anymore. So this is one little trick, yeah? And not just tricks, they're actually an outlook, which I think is in accordance with what in Buddhism we call right view. Once you have that right view, the right outlook, having the right kind of values, that is when things really start to bite. And so how you think about life, how you deal with things outside of meditation, how you reflect about things actually has an incredible impact on what happens when you sit down on your bottom and you try to watch your breath. This is one example. I want to give you another example, which I think is perhaps very topical in the way the world is going now. Yeah, I don't know about you. Sometimes I read the news and all I see is kind of bad stuff, yeah, and it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. You know, politicians seem to be doing weird stuff around the world. I don't know if you noticed that. At least that's my. They've probably always been doing that, but now it seems particularly kind of random what sometimes happens. Environment seems to be going down the drain. Yeah, all the plastic everywhere, all the problems we have, the climate change, endless problems in that area. More refugees around the world than we probably ever had before, apparently. Lots of refugees, in part because of the wars, in part because of, you know, other reasons. And you just look at things, and sometimes you think, you know, I'm not going to be able to sort this out, yeah? You know you can't sort it out. You know you can do your little bit. You do a little bit to help the world. But you, when you look at the world like that, you can. There's two possible reactions. And one of the reactions that I hear people having is they get depressed. They feel the world is going to the dogs. We're kind of heading for World War III. 80% of mankind is going to be wiped out, and we'll be back to the Stone Age after that World War. That's one possible outlook, yeah? So that's kind of... is that bad or is it good? And most people, when they think about the world like that, they think it's bad. They might get depressed, they might get sad because the world seems to be going in the wrong direction. But actually, that is the wrong way of looking at things from a Buddhist point of view. The reality is about the world is that it is out of control. It is by definition impermanent. It is out of control, unreliable. We don't know where it's going to go next. It is possible that there will be a World War III. We can't, you know, it's impossible to say that it's not going to happen. It is possible that the climate change will have tremendously and devastating consequences for the world. We just don't know what's going to happen. And because we don't know what's going to happen, because the world is fundamentally out of control, what that leads to, instead of getting despair about that, getting kind of sad about that, you are already on the spiritual path. Being on a spiritual path, you're already heading in a good direction. This is the kind of the solid and good thing about having a spiritual practice, that personally, you're heading in the good direction regardless of what happens to the world. So what I get when I think about the world like that, I get a sense of, can't take it anymore. I'm not interested in this world. Yeah, it's so out of control. If I think about it, it's just going to cause me more headaches. It is just impermanent. It is unreliable. It is suffering. And when you think like that, actually, you close your eyes, you withdraw into yourself because you lose pretty much all interest in the world outside. So you turn what seems like a sad reflection on the states of affairs in the world, you turn that around to your own advantage, and you find that it actually brings tremendous peace in your meditation practice. Instead of finding refuge outside of you, people really find refuge in the world. This is the problem. Yeah, this is what it means that when you get upset about the world going in a certain way, you're finding refuge in that world. You're expecting the world to give you certain outcomes. I want this person in political power and that person. I want the environment to be looked after. And if it doesn't happen, you despair. Why? You're taking refuge in the world outside. It's the wrong place to take refuge. In Buddhism, we take refuge in the Dhamma. We take refuge in our meditation practice. One of the beautiful sayings of the Buddha just before he passed away, this is in the famous Mahapanibbana Sutta, the Buddha's last passage or walk before he passed away. One of his famous sayings in there is that we should all be islands unto ourselves. We should take the Dhamma as our island. What does that mean? And the Buddha explains what that means, that being island unto yourself means practicing the four satipatthanas, in other words, meditation practice. Yeah? When you do meditation practice, when you watch your breath, you are withdrawing your senses, you're withdrawing your interest from the world, going inside of yourself, finding that security within yourself instead. That is where the real refuge is to be found. And it's marvelous when you develop your mind, when you develop the ability to sustain your attention on the breath, and you do withdraw from the world, you feel a sense of that security inside of yourself, that sense of freedom from external conditions. It is one of those beautiful things that Ajahn Brahm's teacher said. He said that he called that your real home. Your real home is inside of yourself when you withdraw from the external world. So this is the right way of looking at the world. And the Buddha actually has a word for this. This is kind of also really, really nice. Yeah? The Buddha always has a word for almost everything. And his word for this is, it calls a particular type of perception that we have. And this particular perception, are you ready for it? It's called the Sabba Loka Anabhiratta Sanya. Got it? Yeah. It's a very well-known, for those of you who have been Buddhist for a long time, you probably know about this because it is a well-known phrase. It means the perception of non-delight in the whole world, or the perception of withdrawing delight in the entire world. It's right there in the suttas. And it is based, I think, on this kind of idea. You see that the whole world is out of control. You have no idea where it's going to go next. You lose absolutely all interest, that you withdraw into yourself to a place of security within yourself, which is the only place to really go ultimately. So there you are. That is another way of letting go of the future. Yeah. if the whole world is going down the drain, there isn't much of a future out there, so you can kind of forget about the future. Go into yourself and let that be your refuge. Another way of dealing with the future. Yeah, this is so important because this is how we calm our minds down, how we allow ourselves to let go of the thinking mind. Almost everybody has problems with the thinking mind. I think hardly met a meditator who hasn't got some problems with thinking too much. It just seems to be a very common thing here. Unless perhaps you are depressed. If people who are depressed may not think so much, but they have more problems with the mind not being clear, perhaps, or a bit dull. But, you know, those two are very important problems. Another one, and this is a very Buddhist way of, this is more kind of hardcore Dhamma way. Yeah? All this is pretty hardcore Dhamma, actually. Go straight to the suttas, go to the source. So I hope you don't mind that. I hope you. Sometimes people think, oh, this is too much. But please don't think like that. Just take it on board and see what it feels like for you. Huh? So this other thing is what in Buddhism is a very important contemplation in the suttas, in the word of the Buddha, that is the death contemplation. Huh? Yeah, very important thing. And one of the things that I get out of the death contemplation, first of all, it doesn't make me sad. Quite the contrary, it makes me very focused on the present moment. It lets go of all the nonsense in the world. It's a very useful contemplation. Be careful, of course, depending on whether you feel it's good for you or not. If it doesn't feel right, don't do it. If it feels good, then you can go for it very carefully. But one of the things that I always reflect with a death contemplation is that eventually, when I'm on my deathbed, I'm already 54, it's probably just down the track, actually. Maybe it can happen, you know, before I may not even make it to 55. Heart, are you okay? Dunk, 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 you're still working. Okay, good. So, but, you know, things happen so fast. Yeah, before you know it, it's kind of all gone. And I always like to envision myself on my deathbed. On my deathbed, the last few hours of my life, I literally have no future anymore. I have no future in this world. I don't know where I'm going next. Who knows where I'm going next? But I definitely know I have no future in this world anymore. Now, if I am going to be honest, because I don't know when I'm going to die, because I have no idea when it's going to happen, I have to bring that idea of not having a future into the present moment. It's only now that I can train on not having a future. I could be on my death. This is not a death, but my death seat. I could be on my death seat now. I hope not, but I... it's possible. And because it's possible, I have to be ready now. And because I have to be ready at this particular moment, it means that, in a very real sense, I have no future in this particular moment. This idea of not having a future, being a futureless person, if you're really able to bring yourself into that idea, it means that there is nothing really much to think about anymore. Have you noticed, those of you who go to hospital and maybe see people who are dying, if you have done that, many people have done that, have you noticed that people who have practiced well and who have lived a good life, how they often become peaceful on their deathbed? Some people don't, because they are still attached, holding on to worldly things. But some people become really peaceful as they're about to die. Why is that? And of course, the reason why that is the case is because they are giving up the world. They don't have a future anymore. If they have lived skillfully so they can let go of the past, and they also have no future, there's nothing more to think about. They can let go. The future is gone. But don't wait till you are on your deathbed. Do it now. Say to yourself, actually, I really don't have a future, because just down the track I might die. So all of these things that I think about the future are probably just illusions anyway. I have no future. And then see what that does to you. Check it out. And if it is too scary, don't do it. But if it is something that you find useful, then try some of these perceptions. So this is how you can let go of so much of the thinking mind, which is such a massive problem in meditation practice. Bring your mind into the present moment. Let go of all that nonsense. And then mindfulness really starts to happen as a consequence. But remember, all of these things that I've been talking about, all of these perceptions, they happen gradually. It's not something you can just develop just by sitting down and it comes just like that, unless you have super-duper wisdom. But how many of you have got super-duper wisdom? I mean, really super, super, duper, duper. Really kind of, most of us, we're not the Buddha, we're not arahants, so we need to build up that wisdom gradually, gradually, gradually. And as it builds up, eventually it becomes that super wisdom. And then when you sit down, you can draw on those perceptions, draw on those views, draw on those ideas, bring them into your meditation right here and now, and bang, maybe bang is the wrong word, and you feel peaceful, yeah. And this is kind of what it is really is about. This is one way of, and these are powerful things, yeah. Don't underestimate these simple perceptions to make you a more peaceful person. So that is about how some ways to bring about mindfulness by reducing the thinking mind and getting rid of so much of the nonsense in the world. The very last thing I'm going to talk about very briefly is about how to bring happiness into meditation practice. Because one of the things that, again, as I said in the beginning, that stands out about the Buddhist path is that it is happiness that begets more happiness. Happiness leads to happiness, yeah? On and on, like a kind of a virtuous circle, if you like, moving on into the future. And one of the things that you find in one of these suttas I mentioned before, which is the psychology of meditation practice, is where the Buddha describes this personal process. What does it feel like from a first person point of view to meditate if it goes right? Yeah, only if it goes right. If it doesn't go right, of course, it doesn't matter. But the right kind of meditation according to the Buddha, what does that feel like? And what you find is that the way he describes this is that based on certain qualities, I'm talking about those in a second, you start to feel gladness. You feel pamudra. Pamudra is a word for gladness in the Pali language. From pamudra comes the piti. Piti is like the joy. From the piti comes the tranquility. From the tranquility comes the happiness, the sukha. From the sukha comes the real meditation, the samadhi. And if you look at those terms, they are just different terms for happiness, one after the other. More and more happiness, yeah? Degrees of happiness building upon each other until you reach the pinnacle of happiness in samadhi and eventually insight when you see things according to reality. Yeah? And this is so powerful, yeah? It gives you some idea of what kind of meditation is going to work. If you are feeling enormous amounts of suffering in your meditation, if you have pains and problems everywhere, if you feel confused and your mind is kind of all over the place, you know it isn't really right. It gives you an idea of what you should do to guide yourself. Don't just sit there like some kind of robot, yeah, following the program. Okay, must watch the breath, must watch the breath. Yeah, don't kind of be stupid about it. Understand what is required to move you forward. It's supposed to be a positive experience, yeah? And if you remember that, it's actually a very good guide to how the meditation should work. And so don't kind of follow programs. There's too much programming, yeah? This is how you do meditation. You follow this exact method. And as you do so, you just do that regardless of what happens. But please don't do that. Because really, if you do that, you're not allowing enough space for individual differences, which are often enormous, yeah? So you should have some overarching ideas such as the Buddha gives you. It should be something that at least makes you feel at ease, at peace, moving you even towards happiness. So very nice idea to remind you what meditation really should be about. Now we're talking about the highest stages of the meditation, yeah? After mindfulness is established especially. But even before that, it's supposed to be at least peaceful and enjoyable. So how do we do this? The ways to do this, again, is just to develop certain perceptions, certain ways of looking at the world, yeah? And one of the ways that I recommend you to do, and this is kind of part of what we call metta practice, and what is metta meaning, often translating as loving kindness, but it means like friendliness or kindness to the people around you, yeah? So develop that. One of the beautiful things about coming to a group like this, which I it's quite nice to come here on Friday night and sit here and meditate with everyone. There's a very positive kind of energy. That's what I feel. I feel this really positive energy. Everyone coming together, you know that everyone who is here are good people. Everyone who is here is a good person. Otherwise, why would you be here if you didn't have some kind of intention of doing something good with your life or doing something positive for yourself? So remember that. Everyone here has a good intention. Everyone here, regardless of what qualities they may have, at least they are trying. What a wonderful thing it is that people are trying to live life well for themselves and also for others. That is worthy of so much respect, yeah, and so much support and so much rejoicing. So many people in the world actually want to live good lives and do what is right. And when you remember that, when you remember that this is the kind of group you are part of, it lifts up your spirits. You feel better. Yeah, and you become less fault-finding, you have less of a negative mind, you get this positive mind state. And that is so important for meditation to happen. Once you have that positive mind state, that is where the joy, the happiness, and all of these other qualities come out of it. This is one way of doing it. Just remind yourself of how fortunate you are. Wow, so wonderful it is to be part of a community like this. Who knows how long this community is going to last? Now it is here, and what a wonderful thing that is. So this is one way of thinking about this. Another way of just to have gratitude, yeah? Again, a gratitude for the Buddha Society, a gratitude that somebody actually started this place. Buddha Society of Western was started in 1973, has been around for, 45 years or something now. And, they invited the monks to come over here, the nuns eventually, and now it has built up into this beautiful, wonderful place where people can come, they can chill out, they can enjoy the spiritual path, and they can enjoy the companionship of so many other good people. Feel a sense of gratitude for being part of that, for having this opportunity. It is not a given in the world that these opportunities don't just arise out of nowhere. They arise because of people's dedication and effort. And we are all very fortunate. I am extremely fortunate to be able to be part of this, having Ajahn Brahm as my teacher, having the Buddha as my teacher. What a wonderful thing that is. And then when you feel a sense of gratitude, again, it lifts you up. It's a very powerful thing to use in a meditation practice. But the really long-term things that make a really massive difference in your meditation are how you live your ordinary life. And I want to get back to this because this is really where this whole thing called meditation kind of comes together. How you live your life is absolutely fundamental for your ability to meditate well, for your ability to find joy and happiness in a meditation practice, for your ability to find real meaning and purpose in life. So how do you live your life? You live your life without harming other beings, yeah? You live your life without breaking your precept, without doing bad things to others, by body speech, also by mind. But not just that. When we talk about morality in Buddhism, and I would like to emphasize this again and again and again, we're not just talking about the negative morality, what you should not do, also the positive morality. Be kind. Be gentle, be caring, be supportive in how you speak and how you act towards other people. Think about other people in the right way. And as all of these things come together, you're gradually changing your character. You're gradually becoming another person. And you start, and then once that character change starts to happen, that is when meditation also starts to bite as a consequence. Character change and meditation go together. And when they go together like that, it becomes very, very powerful. You start to feel good about yourself. Yeah, don't forget that in Buddhism, it is okay to think, yeah, I'm living a good life actually. I'm doing my best. I'm being kind. I'm doing my, I have a few mistakes, of course, that's okay. But generally speaking, I'm living a good life. Don't have to tell the whole world. Probably not a good idea. Don't tell the whole world, but just close your eyes and feel that inside of yourself. Yeah, feel the feeling of knowing that you're living well, you're doing your very best, you're supporting others, supporting yourself, you're avoiding harming people and other beings in the world. That quiet sense of satisfaction with yourself is actually what we're trying to get to. Deepen that more and more, and then the meditation happens. So I started off this whole talk saying I was going to talk about meditation practice because meditation is a very important part of the Buddhist path. But even more important or even more basic than meditation practice, the thing that makes this whole process possible is how we live our lives. So put enormous effort into how you live your life, or maybe not enormous effort, but enormous care into how you live your life. Enormous, be heedful, yeah, be circumspect, and then your whole thing will start to change as a consequence because of that. And then meditation will work. Meditation is not a standalone thing. It is something that happens in a nexus with other qualities. Character development, meditation, and finally that meditation itself is also just another tool. It is a tool for developing wisdom. And when you have wisdom, that is when ultimately you can attain the highest kind of happiness. Anyway, so that is really the talk for this evening, and the main purpose is just to give you some idea, some skillful means in how to think about meditation practice and hopefully developing it further into the future here. Okay, so now you have a chance to ask questions and to make comments and to complain. No, please don't complain. We don't take complaints tonight. So, anyone has a question they would like to ask you? Everyone is so happy, so content. Okay. So please don't be afraid of asking kind of newbie questions, because lots of questions are basic, but often everyone is often happy to hear basic questions. So don't feel bad about that. Okay. Not everyone happy? Yeah, everyone kind of satisfied? Okay, good. So let's take the questions from overseas or wherever they come from. Okay, thank you. Okay, so this question is from WG. WG from Germany. WG, okay. Is that Wolfgang, perhaps? I don't know. I just had a lung operation and lost part of that lung. Now I have a problem meditating, having negative mood despite of all efforts. How can I find peace? Okay, so you have a negative mood despite all effort. Maybe you're making too much effort. Maybe that's why you're having negative mood. Yeah, all effort sounds like, sounds really tiring. Yeah, despite all efforts. Maybe too much effort. Maybe you just need to relax a little bit more. Yeah. But really, what you should do, what you should ask yourself is, why do you have the negative mood? A negative mood has a source. It doesn't just arise out of nothing. Yeah, the moods are something that come into our life because of the way we look at the world or something like that. So try to reflect why your mood is negative. Is it because you think that there's no hope anymore because you lost half of your lung and that kind of life is going downhill and that now it's sort of, there's no hope? Is that the reason why you feel negative? If so, you can turn that around. And this is one of the things I just talked about during the talk tonight, yeah? How you can turn around the idea of life being difficult and problematic and take advantage of that to let go of things and then turn inward instead and find refuge inward. So investigate that mood. That's the most important thing you can do. If you are careful and you are gentle with yourself and you look at yourself with a kind of not a reactive eye, it's very important not to react. One of the problems with reacting to life is that we are not able to see life clearly. It's actually a very important point. So much of the time we react to things. People say something to us and we react because we don't like it or whatever. But as soon as we react, we lose the ability to be clear about what's going on. Instead, we should be more like a scientist. Someone said something bad to us, and we should say, interesting. Yeah, can you do that? Yeah, very interesting. They're saying something bad to you. So see what happens. Look at your reaction. Look at the interchange between you and the other person, and see what's going on. And if you see a kind of slight degree of kind of irritation or negativity come up, ask yourself why that is. And you will see that, of course, it has to do with the other person. And you will see that you haven't really looked at the other person in the right way. You haven't given them enough compassion or understanding or whatever. You haven't understood that they are just going to the beat of their own inner drummer. They don't have much choice but to be the way they are. You will see that all of that is lacking in your perception. And by bringing that in, you will be able to overcome those things. So in exactly the same way, try to understand where that mood comes from. Why is it coming up? Yeah, there's always a reason for this. And as soon as you understand why, you will also know the solution to that thing. The solution is found in the teachings of the Buddha. There's always a solution there. If you can't find a solution after finding the cause of the mood, then come back next week. Yeah, ask the same question again, and we'll then see if we can take it one step further. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much, WG, for your question from Germany. Yeah. Anyone else like to say anything? Yeah. Last chance? Yeah, Friday night talks only once a week? Yeah? No? Anyone good? Okay, great. Let's pay homage to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.